NA DBF.
Good morning. W8FU.
Good morning. And I can't see out of anything. Is it nice and dewy and foggy by you?
There's a little fog over the river. But other than that, no. I mean, maybe. It's hard to tell. There's just a little lingering off in the... Yeah, I don't detect much of any. But the windows in the car are just really, really gummied up. Finally got them clear. I needed to get the heat on, the frost and all that. It wasn't frost, though. It was just moisture. So I think there's a lot of moisture in the air, but we don't have a lot of fog down here.
I can't tell if it rained. It had to have rained. Yeah, the roads look a little wet. I was going to say, there's no way this is just dew and condensation on my truck. You should see. I mean, it looks like I just pulled it out of the car wash. But good. My grass needs some moisture.
Yeah, down here, I wouldn't know it rained. I mean, I don't know that it rained, except for, you know, I see little, you know, at the curb, I see still a little bit, so... There was enough to have it running along the curb. All the low spots seem to have little, I wouldn't say standing water, but, well, a tiny, tiny bit of standing water. So it must have rained.
Well, there you go. They forecasted rain all week, and we got one day. Or no, you guys did get some early in the week, didn't you, down there?
Did we? I can't recall. But, yeah, we must have a little overnight. The curbs are all pretty much got a little bit along the side of the road. The surface street, you know, you wouldn't know. In parking lots and sidewalks and all that, you wouldn't know. Just were it not for that tiny little bit of pooling along the curb. So, must not have been a whole lot. But, like you said, everything needs it, so, yeehaw, my grass looks so bad this year, oh my god, I'm going to probably have to pay a pro to come in and do something about it.
It's usually how it goes for me. I plant grass and then I don't get rain. Like, think about, well, I guess last year was kind of an exception too, but we got rain all summer long, and then I plant grass in the fall, and then it's a drought. Same here. Get rain all spring, I plant grass, and it stops raining. It's just my life.
I know you're supposed to, like, reseed in the fall, right? Before winter sets in, or late fall, so that it, I think that's what you're supposed to do. Then it works its way down into the soil and snow and everything like that sits on top. And come spring and start sprouting. I didn't do that, but I always heard that's the way you're supposed to do it.
I forgot what zone we're in. There's like a whole, there's an entire community that obsess over this crap. I just want green stuff, not brown stuff. And they all say, given our region and all that crap, our weather trends, you plant in the fall for best success. Because in the spring, if you plant, you have a hard time getting those roots to establish themselves before the extreme heat and dryness come, and then it can die off. So I only did half, maybe not even, of my application rate just to kind of overseed, try to thicken up some bare spots in the spring, but I'll hit it hard again in the fall, and hopefully that'll be the last time.
So what do you do this time of year if you've got some spots you want to try to get going? You just give it a try and hope?
Yeah, you rake the ground, break it up, topsoil if you need it. If you got good dirt, you don't. Rake it up, cover it up, and then fertilize and water.
Yeah, I should at least try a couple of spots in the front yard in particular, but I was just looking at it. I'm like, oh my God, this is terrible. You know, the other part is that I don't bag. I've got too much property to bag, and you got to get that mulch up. Otherwise, it just starts to just choke off everything below it.
You don't want to bag. Bagging's bad, but you want to have good mulching blades, and you want to dethatch your yard.
Yeah, I was thinking about getting a thatching attachment for my tractor. Hopefully, I don't know how that will work, but give that a whirl.
These are all things that I look forward to doing. Got my shiny new mower sitting in the garage that doesn't get you. Well, actually, I got to break it out. I'm over-exaggerating. I actually got a decent amount of grass. My front yard looks pretty damn good. Backyard's got some strips that were missed because I bought a tow-behind spreader that I'm probably going to just blow up at some point. It's actually the second one. They warranted the first one because it was so bad. And a huge disappointment because I have their walk-behind spreader, and that thing's the best one I've ever used. But, yeah, I mean, worst-case scenario, you're out a bag of seed and a little bag of fertilizer if you want to try it. Or you don't even need to get a full bag. You can go to Home Depot and get, they got the little 8-pounders, depending on how bad it is and how much you got to cover. But, I'm just kind of doing the rain dance, waiting for some more.
Well, and that's, yep. Well, that's the other thing. If it's not too big of an area, you can try to help it through the dry periods with watering. So get you through. But I'm gonna have to do something. I'm just looking at it. I haven't cut yet, but there's the areas that are okay are healthier and needing it, and the areas that aren't, it's like, man, just trying to let what's there grow in. But it, I don't know. It's bad.
Found a new bad spot where the trees grow in. I don't know if I'm coming in okay, but I feel like a lawn is a never-ending project, and that's where we're at. It's like, how the hell do you water 2.5 acres?
I mean, that's the good part. I don't got to do the whole, I don't have to do the whole acre. I just have to do, a few areas that really need help, and so I could, and then you can, if you got to do a bigger, you just have to alternate. But yippers, I got a well somewhere on my property. I know where it is. I'm thinking about uncapping that and seeing if I get see if that still works. I could just use the well for the watering.
Well, that's sweet. So you're on city water, but I'm assuming that well's been there for some time. Are you allowed to use it? Can you put wells in Warren still?
I have no idea, but I was just thinking there's one there. I mean, it's been decades, so I'm guessing it'd probably be, it probably wouldn't be functional. Maybe it would be functional, I don't know. It probably hasn't worked. It was probably a hand pump, knowing, I still see in the basement, I can still see where the pipes brought it in, but I'm probably never going to look at it. I've never uncovered it. I know where the plate is they covered it up with. I found that with a metal detector.
The good old metal detector that I couldn't find my ring with. I still have no idea where that thing went.
Oh, that's right. That's right. If I remember correctly, it was winter and snow was a feasibility, but, now it's probably worked its way down into the dirt and the grass, but have you looked for it since the weather broke?
Well, this was over a year ago. This was before I even had all the dirt brought in, so it's probably under a good 3 foot of dirt.
Okay, yeah, that's the case. So you brought in all that dirt, I remember that, and then you seeded the whole thing after that. I mean, obviously you must have, so it must have taken hold, eh? It's been a while.
Yeah, what's there is fantastic. It's just the spots that didn't get covered because the cedar was a pile of garbage. So I've got these, like, giant swaths in the backyard that are just bare.
Yeah, it's a Friday. You know, Anthony. It'll be quiet this morning. Over here at 16 coming up on Grosbeck, so... wouldn't say ahead of schedule. I've been pretty much running this schedule for a while now. Get in about quarter after-ish, give or take. So, my official start time is 7:30, for what it's worth. Oh, man. Man, I've been trying to break into a shelter. Went there a day before yesterday with with the intent to get in. And the door was jimmied up, couldn't get in. And so I went back yesterday with some bolt cutters. There is no way I'm going to cut the shank in this padlock. So now I got to go back maybe with a grinding wheel, try it that way. But, man, what a pain.
I've got an 18-volt cordless grinder if you would like to borrow it. And I got some cutoff wheels that'll probably... Ooh, I don't know. That's hardened steel, though. I'm trying to think. No, it cuts grade A. Yeah, I've got a cordless one if you want to borrow it.
Yeah, we got one at the shop. I was going to take it with me yesterday, but I didn't. Idiot. We were debating. And everybody was like, those work. No, they didn't. So, I mean, I'm kind of glad they didn't. Because, that's just too easy. Grinder is not hard, but makes a lot of racket, and you can't just sneak in. Since all my sites are behind 24/7 man fire stations, it's not like you can run a grinding wheel out there at the middle of the night to break into the compound. And not only that, even if you get into the compound, there ain't a whole lot there. You still got to get in the shelter. So, and then I don't know if anybody would want it. There ain't nothing in it nobody would want or could use.
You need to invest in a good set of lock picks. If it's just a regular old padlock, you'll be able to get that thing open in no time.
Oh, you know what? I think my son has a set of lock picks, and he's been learning. He's only a couple miles from there. And I ask him. It's not a bad idea.
I've been carrying a set for going on 3 years now, and I am constantly asked to find something to, we can't find the key for this, we can't get in this room, or, we acquired a bunch of properties that no one left keys for, so they come in handy, and I'm by no means proficient single pin picker. You just have a bunch of bypass tools and rakes, and for the most part, I'm pretty successful.
All right, I just texted him. Find out. He might, I know he's off today. He might want to give it a whirl. Come pick a lock for me. I'll buy lunch. So, anywho, that would be a lot easier and cleaner than the grinding wheel solution.
That was always my philosophy. If I can just open it, I don't need to cut it. And then carrying the cutting tools is a lot harder to carry than the tools that just slip in my backpack. That's a whole, I don't know if you've ever looked up any of that crap. It's a whole rabbit hole. Like, that's another, like the grass thing. There's people that lock pick things. They buy every lock they can find, and they just practice picking them.
I've watched a little bit, but not enough to know what to do. I mean, I look at all them tools, and I have no idea which one to use and, what I'm doing. I mean, I know the concept, what's going on, but still, there's a technique that has to be followed in order to get there. You got to push the tumblers or the, not tumblers, the pins, in the right order or what. I just, clearly you just don't arbitrarily grab a tool out of the kit and just put it in there and wiggle it around. There's, you have to know kind of what you're doing.
Yeah, you gotta, like, keep tension on the tumbler, so the pins, when you pop them up, they stay. It's a whole thing. The feel is the hard part, but yeah, that's why I predominantly just use the bypass tools. I'm not going to sit there and pretend I know how to pick them. I just either you rake them and you pop them, which is pretty easy to do with most simple locks, or I've got some specific, like, padlock knives and all that crap to just rip them open real quick. But that's a whole other skill set in itself, is just being able to feel those pins.
And what do you do with the combo lock?
Believe it or not, if you're talking about, like, the ones you roll, not the ones you twist, those are even easier. I've got a bypass tool that it's a decoder, so you shove it in between the metal loop part, and it actually binds against the bar that you're rotating the numbers on, and you'll feel it stop on the right number. So then you can decode it that way, and it just opens.
All right. And if there's no keyhole to pick, how do you do it? So, I gotcha. So, what you're saying, it goes between the rotating part and the case, like you slip it in between there?
Yeah, most cheap com locks have enough tolerance in them that you can fit it in there. I got a couple different sizes, you know, that we're talking like thousandths of an inch, and it's basically got this little hook on it, little lip. And you put it in there, and you'll be able to feel it when you start rotating it, and when you hit the right number, it'll actually bind. And that's why they call it a decoder, because then you can decode the comm based on the resistance you feel.
Right, got it. Huh. So, well, we use those in some places. All right, I'm ordering my coffee right back.
NADDF. Good morning, sleepyhead.
Yep, on Friday they get to sleep an extra 30 minutes. Big fun.
I'm not used to hearing you at all on Friday.
Yeah, I was up. I figured I'd turn the radio on and see what was going on.
Dude, 30 minutes is underrated. That's no joke if you're talking about getting an extra couple minutes in the morning.
No kidding. Going from waking up at 5:30 to 6 is incredible.
So, Anthony, when you get your general, are you going to get a vanity call, or are you going to keep KE8RUH?
That's always a good, frustrating time.
I doubled. All right, try this again. Anthony, when you get your general, are you going to get a vanity call, or are you keeping K8RUH?
I don't know. I was thinking about it, and I think I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but I don't know what to do. We'll see.
I need someone to play Envis with, man. Come on.
Working on it, man. I've probably spent 3 to 4 hours this week rolling through the questions on hamstudy.org, just trying to start getting some memory and recognition of the terms and starting to figure out what's happening, a little bit of memorization also. So if I can keep up with that and get, you know, 4 or 5 hours a week, I think give it a month or so and I'll be ready. We'll see what happens.
All right, I was doing the whole Starbucks thingy. What are we studying for, general?
Yep, I've been putting a little bit of time to it this week and trying to put some time to it, getting some recognition and some memorization of some of the questions and terminology, and just going to try to stick with it for a couple weeks and see where I can get. Give it, 4 or 5 hours a week and see where I get.
Cool. Yeah, you'll really enjoy it. And, it's not hard. Someone like you should be able to get it, you know. So, just
the trick that I have heard and I will share for the millionth time, and I'm sure you've heard it, only study the right answers. Don't look at the wrong answers. Dakota? Double with you there in the beginning a little bit, sorry. But agreed, all I did was flashcards. I didn't have study.org on the app, and I just flipped through them and memorized the answers. I don't know. It's important to understand the material, but I think it's more important to just get the damn license and start practicing. You know, if you have tech, you generally already have the proper etiquette and understand how a QSO is supposed to go. I mean, granted, it's a little casual over here, but I think it's more important to get the license. When you start learning, you're not going to learn anything from a test. But, yeah, flashcards, man. I just flipped through those until my proficiency in the section was good. I would take the practice quiz next. And I was just telling Anthony, now that we're members of ARPSC, we gotta start playing Envis and dialing all the local comm HS stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of my goal, is to just kind of memorize everything, get past the test portion of it, and then, you know, luckily I associate with a lot of rather smart people that are general or more that will be able to guide me through any issues that I may or may not have. So, I just need to break through that barrier and move on.
Memorization gets a bad rap because, you know, in some cases, like rules and regulations, that's all it is. I mean, what else is it? There's no understanding. And you might say, well, why do we, do this or why do we do that? But, you know, for rules and regulations, you just got to know that you can or can't do something. So that's fine. Now, when you get into technical stuff, I get it. There's a calculation. But it's also equally important to know that when you're faced with a problem that was something, that was one that was asked in the test, you remember, oh, I know I can calculate that. You might have to say, okay, what was that, a formula again? You know, or something, you know, I mean, so memorizing, you know, is not as evil a thing as you think. I get it. Just knowing the formula natively and recognizing that I need to use, you know, the formula here, you know, to calculate. You know, I would say there's some, you know, that you kind of just got to know intuitively, like, you know, the relationship between, you know, voltage and current and stuff like that, you know, because wattage and stuff like that, because that'll help you, you know, pick the appropriate size wires and, you know, and appropriate size power supplies for the rigs you're running and stuff like that. But those are all things that you will really learn in practice. But the question is, you know, and knowing that, oh yeah, I know that I can figure that out, is enough, you know. So I wouldn't totally sell memorization short. So there you go. The same can be said for grade school math, too, where we weren't allowed to use a calculator because teachers always said you're not going to have a calculator with you all the time. It's like half of the time we're operating, we're sitting in front of a computer anyway. So it's like, just look it up. You know, I got ChatGPT in my pocket. I need to calculate what gauge wire I need for this much amp draw on a 12.8 volt radio, blah, 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 blah. And it just tells you. But, you know. But I agreed. Like, there are some things, like, I took for granted and just remembered the answers, and ChatGPT doesn't give me a straight answer, and forums don't give me a good answer. Prime example, I bought a BNC binding post, or a bunch of them. I'm going to make an 80-meter dipole for Envis, because it's super lightweight, super easy, and I can put it on my Carbon 6 map. I cannot find a straight answer if the 40-meter harmonic is going to be resonant enough to not use a tuner. So I guess there's things like that where you either understand the concept or you learn in practice, which apparently this weekend I'm going to learn in practice.
Yeah, there's so much of it that is that too, right? It is a matter of trial and error and figuring it out on your own, because there's not definite answers out there. Or there is answers, but they're vague or whatever it may be. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I think for the level of familiarity that I have with it so far, what I've gone through, I'm doing just fine. because there are things that I definitely don't know, and also there's the barrier of, man, I haven't taken a test in a long time, so to study for one is, you got to get that muscle working again, so we'll see. I'm not putting any timeline on it or anything, I'm just happy I'm finally taking some action. We'll see what happens. K-A-R-U-H.
Yeah, you'll be all set. You'll get it. So, all right, I just pulled up at work. I'm going to get inside. I'll be back on the Cisco shortly. W8FU. All right, I'll be here for a little bit. And, yeah, Anthony, you're a gear whore just as much as I am. You know, that was my motivation. It's like, oh, my God, all the cool stuff lives over on HF. So then you get to do stupid stuff like cut 120-foot wires.
I'm, you know, like you said, I want to try some of the NVIS stuff. I want to try some of the, you know, get out there long distance, things like that that I don't have access to right now. And then there's, you know, a whole other level of gear to have. So it'll be fun. I just got to get past this barrier and get it done, and then the world's my oyster.
Unfortunately for you, you already have most of the gear. I told you I ordered a DigiRig for the 857, so that's where I'm at. I don't even care about the shack anymore. Everything is going in a bag. I feel like freaking gasping, and I hate myself.
Yeah, well, that's where it gets useful, is when you can be mobile with it and play with it. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I play with my HF gear way more, not at my desk. I play lately, I've been playing my 705 because I've just been sending emails on Winlink like a complete nerd, but I don't know why I'm having so much fun with that. I'll email my wife just to annoy her, but, you know, eventually I would love a Shack radio again, like a 7300 Mark II or something like that, 100 watt, but again, I don't do a lot of work in the Shack. I like playing out in the yard, testing antennas, and you know, I want to start doing POTA again. It's just the weather's been so bad. Now it's finally decent. But, yeah, I've been watching a lot of his videos, and I don't know, man. Something about that guy just kind of bugs me, but his information's so good.
I couldn't have said it better myself. I don't know, and I have no right saying this, but that guy might be a total jerk, and I haven't dialed it in to figure out what I truly think. I think he might be a very difficult human.
He just seems like a LARPer. And I mean, I guess at the end of the day, we're all LARPers, right? But he just seems like he takes us to the night. So, oh, maybe not, though, because he does go out in the desert and camp and all that crap, but I mean, he's good at what he does. It's just the way he delivers it. It's like, dude, I don't... Can you give me, like, a synopsis, like, just a quick rundown, a summary of what you did here?
Yeah, it does get exhausting sometimes, but his information's so good, and I watch every video he puts out. It's very frustrating.
He's the one that gave me the idea for the 80-meter dipole with the BNC binding post and the 40-meter dipole. Like, man, I mean, it's a great idea. But I guess he's also the reason I have Manpax and Armalocks and all that crap.
Yep. He's cost both of us lots of money, so. But like you said, he does it right. It's all good.
Speaking of, did you ever find a bag that fit your 706 with the Armalock on it?
Not yet. I just have it on my desk in the basement right now. That's one of the next things I gotta do is find a bag, figure out how I wanna power it, and come up with, I wanna buy a good dual band J-pole. I know I've talked about it in the past, but I'd like to get something like that, and then probably start making some antennas like you're doing, and just something that's clean and streamlined and small, so it's packable.
I don't know how much power you're looking for, but it's like the N9PAX or something like that, N9-something-something labs. He makes a roll-up J-pole that works really, really, really well. That's actually what's in my A57 bag, because it's PNC, which is convenient, because that's everything normal lock does. So I can throw that with a throw bag up in a tree, and it's got a 16-foot piece of coax on it, so you can get it up there pretty decent. And I tested it in the field. It works great. I was able to get into Warren with a HT from downtown Elmont.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
I need to just order one, and I've looked at those before. And then, because that's multi-purpose, I mean, that's something that I can use today, you know, with the license I have. So it could be in a bag with a HT, or it could be in a bag with that 706.
Yeah, that's why I bought it. Like, you know what, this can live in a bag. If I need something better than a rubber duck, this will do it. But I am backing in my spot here, so enjoy your work from home Friday. I'm going to get in the office and bang out whatever I can to get the hell out of here early, or try to leave. So I'll listen out, and I'm sure I'll text you throughout today. At ABBS.
Alright, cool. Have a good day. Hey, reach out to you tomorrow and see if you have a few minutes to hop on computer with me and show me how to do that hex code thing for the 1.6 Moto Turbo software, because I want to see, I think the programming for my hotspot, my analog hotspot on that 7550 is not simplex, possibly. So I want to get that figured out so that I can use that as a node radio also. And then maybe you can help me out, show me how you did your settings for WinLink, and then I can be dialed in with both of those things. But we'll see if we both have time tomorrow.
Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem. I might have not even turned on transit permit for that, like an idiot, if it just beeps when you try to key it up. But we'll get you squared away. We can do a Teams call or a Google Meet or something. But we'll figure it out.
All right, sweet. Have a good day. KDRUH. I'll be monitoring.
NABBF. And Sean, if you're listening, I think the Central Michigan Network is still disconnected.
Sunny out there, a little coolish.
Yeah, they say it's supposed to warm up, but I don't believe it. Interesting. I'm going to turn some of these radios off over here. I've got all sorts of radios barking at me this morning.
Yes, yes. Good problem to have. Too many radios. Me as well. So I'm just going to be making a task book for the last one we got there, and go from there today. I believe the boss is off, so I'll get with him, see how he wants to proceed on the D2 net thing.
Okay. Call me on the bad phone. I have to ask you a question about the test book anyways.
QSY, NAWRO, clear.
Okay,
KPR.
K-E-8-R-U-H, what's going on, Rick?
Just out here on the porch enjoying the almost warm weather and sunny days and having a cigar. How about you?
I am working from home today, so I'm sitting at that kitchen counter because it's the closest to the windows and enjoying the sun coming in, getting some work done.
Oh, there's nothing better than being able to work from home. Well, that's great if you can do that. Hopefully you can do that as much as possible.
I enjoy it. I like going into the office, though. I go a little stir-crazy if I'm stuck at home. So 1-2 days a week is perfect for me.
Well, I can see that. And if you don't have a long drive on the way in, I used to live in Lapeer and always work down in Troy and Novi and all that. So driving was a real pain there. Especially sometimes we work on a Saturday, only work half a day. It was sort of like, geez, I'm probably going to spend more for gas going back and forth in time than I'm making that day.
Yeah, I'm in, I live in Grosse Pointe and work in Troy. So it is, I got definitely 30 minutes on each side. So I spend a minimum an hour in the car a day.
Oh, yeah, that's enough, especially during rush hour there, which it might turn into hour and a half or more. That's like from Lapeer down to Novi and Troy and all that. It was usually about an hour and a half each way for me. So we'd work 10 or 12 hours and then 3 hours on the darn highways. But a lot of the times it was before the rush hour in the morning and after it in the evening.
Yeah, I get the early at the office, so I'm usually just ahead of rush hour. You know, I leave the house between 6:15 and 6:30, and that gets me there before rush hour. But on the way home, sometimes it's a nightmare.
Well, I understand that. When I was working at Modern there and in the shop as a pipe fitter in Novi. We started at 7, but I'd leave the house at 5:05. I get there just a little after 6, I think it was, kind of thing. Sometimes I was there before the fellow that opened the doors and turned the lights on, kind of thing. But it was worth it to me to beat all the rush hour traffic there.
Absolutely. It is just brutal sometimes in all that traffic.
Yeah, and you're right. Yeah, you know, in the morning you can always go a little early and kind of beat it kind of stuff. But on the way home, there's not a whole lot you can do. So a lot of times I would, I was single, and so I'd usually stop at a restaurant. I must go by 100 restaurants on the way home kind of thing. So I used to stop somewhere closer to home, but if I just wanted to stay out of the traffic, I'd go somewhere down by work there and have a nice dinner kind of thing and wait, and by the time I got done with that, traffic would be nice and clear.
Yeah, that's the way you got to do it. I would do something similar, but I think my family would have something to say about that sometimes. So if I waited until 6 o'clock and went and had dinner and a cocktail, and they might not be happy if I got home at 7:30 every night. Which is reason.
Yeah, I understand that. And when Mama's not happy, nobody's happy. All I had waiting for me at home was a dog, so he didn't put up much of a fuss. He was always glad to see me.
Yep, there's definitely a difference.
So you got anything fun planned for the weekend?
Much, just laying low. If the weather cooperates, I might go fishing tomorrow afternoon, evening. But other than that, I'll just be hanging out.
Oh, that a boy. So what are you fishing for? Walleye off the shoreline there?
Well, it really depends on how ambitious I get. I may run out to Rochester area and fish the Paint Creek for trout, or I'll just stay local here and hit some of the parks on Lake St. Clair and try for some bass or something.
Oh, cool. I haven't been there in quite a long time, but Paint Creek used to be pretty good for trout. You know, that stretch between Lake Orion and Rochester there. And if I remember right, I think the GNR started planting that for a while until some of the natural reproduction took off. But that was always a fun place to fish. I used to like it down at by the cider mill on the other side of the dam. I'd fish for steelhead under that bridge at DeQuinder. But you're right near DeQuinder, 23 Mile.
Oh, yeah, I've spent a ton of time fishing the Clinton River over there, right where you're talking about, by Yates Cider Mill. I don't have a ton of time on the Paint Creek, but a little bit, and did some location scouting in the fall, and I think I know right where I want to go, so we shall see. Like I said, I think it's supposed to rain a little bit, and it all depends on how ambitious I get. If I want to drive the 45 minutes to an hour to get out there and trout fish, or if I want to just stay close to home and give it an hour or two and get some dinner local, we'll see what happens.
Well, cool, and I understand the ambition thing there, that's for sure. I got a new license, what, a month or 2 months ago, something like that kind of thing, before the other one ran out. And I got a lake that's only 300 yards down the street here, but I just don't have the energy to get down there and do it. I got a bunch of medical crap going on, but one of these days I've been going to PT, physical therapy, so hopefully I'm going to get a little bit better and get down there and get some fishing done before the lake gets busy with the jet skis and swimmers and all the other stuff.
Yeah, get down there right now, pre-spawn bass. They should be fat and slow and easy to catch.
Yes, sir, and right after the ice out, not very long after the ice out, the crappies come in there, great big crappies. Just schools of them, it's a ball.
Well, there you go. If you get ambitious, sounds like you know what you're doing this weekend.
Well, maybe early Sunday morning, daylight, just at the crack of dawn there, but tomorrow I got PT again, and usually by the time I get done with that, I'm kind of wiped out for the day. This getting old ain't for the meek, you know what I mean?
I can imagine that if they do their job, you are probably absolutely exhausted after that.
Well, they got to take it easy on me. I got a bad heart condition there, and they know about it, so they don't work me too hard. In fact, they're constantly asking me, are you okay? Are you okay? Last thing they want is an ambulance come showing up at the PT place. It's kind of bad advertising.
Yeah, I can't imagine that's too good of a look on their reputation. So, yeah, they probably want to keep everybody upright.
So now you got my curiosity, Pete, there. Are you going to be fly fishing or ultralight spinner fishing or fill me in? AWOJ.
Be fly fishing. And then if I go over here on Lake St. Clair, I'll probably bring a fly rod with some streamers and sinking line, and then I'll also have a spinning rod with me.
Well, that's cool. I got lazier the older I got, kind of thing, and I gave up on the fly. And although I still fish with flies, I just use it on a spinning rod and a little split shot. I found too when I was doing a lot of that at that park there at Yates, I spent a lot of time getting flies out of trees. So I spent more time in the water with a spinning rod.
Yeah, you know, they're both good for different circumstances, and they have times that one is more effective than another, regardless, whether you're in big water on a lake or on a river, they both have their place.
P-A-W-O-J. Well, the one advantage I found in fly fishing was... when I was moving around, I'd have the fly drifting down, hanging downstream quite a ways kind of thing. And as I was walking along through there behind the cider mill kind of thing in some of that shallower water, I had quite a few fish hit while I was just letting it drag out behind me. No casting at all.
K-8-R-U-H. Absolutely. You know, everybody talks about having the perfect drift and, you know, you got to have all this placement. And there's just as many times that you're just walking along and the fly's floating out there and something just smokes it.
Yes, sir, and it pays to try a lot of different things. I showed up at the park there across from Yates and to fish that bridge, and there was a couple guys that had been there for 4 or 5 hours using bait, plunking, I guess they were, and they hadn't had a thing, you know, and I kind of walked up, and I'd read a few articles about some of these little tiny ultralight plugs, so I got a few of them, and I tried it out, and I made two casts and hooked a steely. Boy, were them guys hot.
Yeah, I bet they were. But, Rick, I got to get back to work here. Otherwise, I'm going to be working into the evening. So I'll catch up with you soon. I'll call back out if I take another break. This is K-8-R-U-H. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, young man, you have a good day, and don't work too hard, and we'll catch you later. Be careful out here. And if you... I don't catch up with you, and you do get out, good luck. You got me going, too, now. Maybe I might try to wander down there. Anyway, have a good one, K-8-W-O-J. We'll catch you later.
This is Kilo Echo 2, Bravo November Yankee, monitoring.
I'll be KL4HTA, Kilo MF4, Hotel Tango Alpha. And anybody around Mount Clemens, Michigan, KL4HTA. I guess nothing heard. I guess there's nobody on the lake here. I'd be Tango 4, HTA, Kilo Lima 4, Hotel Tango Alpha.
This is W8VIJ Waterford, Michigan, calling and standing by.
Time at work, but I'm not that deep into the Motorolas yet or at all. I don't really see, I just see like generic run-of-the-mill stuff when I do get it in. And unfortunately right now I have a bunch of UHF stuff and not a lot of, well, not any, I'm sorry, a lot of VHF and not any UHF.
Okay, where do you work that you run across that stuff?
The company I work for does IT asset management, and we take in a lot of end-of-life electronics, and we see from some contracts that we have, we see Motorola stuff every now and again. I wish it was more often than it is.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to be going a week from today, be down in Hamvention. I'll be looking around down there, seeing what's available. I want to get some kind of a DMR mobile. Dual band would be nice. So I'm looking at the CS800. But I understand the morals of the king. Which the UHF, which would probably be okay, too.
Phil?
Yeah, did you lose me?
Yeah, I must have. I don't know if you heard what I was saying. The company I work for does IT asset management, and some of the contracts that we have, we get that type of gear every now and again.
Yeah, I replied to that, and it was backfiring myself, so I know I was getting in. So, like I said, I want to get a remote head DMR, at least, definitely UHF, maybe dual band if I can swing it. Going down to Hamvention next week, and I'll be looking around for something like that.
Yeah, well, I'd love to tell you I have it and be able to get you set up, but I don't, and I don't get it in with any regularity that I could even tell you I could help you out at any given time. So if I see anything like that, I'll let you know. It would be a big win if I found something like that come through.
Alrighty, no problem. Okay. Hold on a second. Let me switch back over to VHS. I'm out near my house now. I want to see if I can get in.
No problem.
Noisy. I was trying to, I'm stopped and go at a light, and I was trying to move the car so I could get, out of the noise, but I can only move so far without ramming into the car in front of me. So, but that was 75 watts of the quarter wave from near Pontiac.
Very cool. Alright, I'm pulling into the driveway here. Good luck finding stuff at Hamvention. I was talking with Sean in Dakota the other day about maybe next year going down there and checking that out. I've never been, so we'll see. But all right, have a good day. This is KE8RUH. I'll be clear on your final.
Okay, Anthony. Catch you later. KE8PR.
W8FU.
Hey, Sean, how you doing, young man?
Not bad.
Are you behaving?
Yep. I just, possibly... made a hasty, I'm going up to At Home, buying a $99 gaming chair. I'm kind of leery of a $99 gaming chair, but I'm going to give it a whirl.
Oh, well, cool. Good luck with that. And by the way, stop that behaving stuff, you know. you get bored to death, and... you know, once you get old, you have to behave. You got no other choice.
Oh, you always have a choice.
Hey, did you get that link I sent you to AmmoSeek?
I did. I went through quite a bit of it, and almost all of it was that Seller and Belliot or whatever. That I think it's a French company. It's notorious for really, you know, cheap ammo. I don't know if it's steel cased or not. Probably not, but you know, but it was cheaper, and then I started cruising up. And I don't know, but it makes you think I can get 30-06 for under a buck a round. If I want to get the Seller Belliot or I think there were a couple other ones in there. I think there was an American Eagle Choice at, you know, about 98 cents a round. I don't know. Is this old school Korean War vintage ball, worth paying a little premium for, I just don't know. I guess I can't probably go wrong getting it. I figure I'll just pick it up.
Yeah, I was surprised by all the whatever Seller and Bloyd or whatever it is. I've got a buddy that shoots that stuff, and he seems happy with it. I mean, it's not real accurate. Well, I should say that. It could be him. But anyway, he didn't seem to have any whole lot of trouble with it. And then they had, but I was surprised that was the bulk of what was being offered there. There was a preview, I can't remember. It was another imported stuff that had 150 grain bullets. And it was the M2 ball stuff, like you were looking at, too. But it was, what was it? I think it was 307, or no, it was, doggone it. I think it was 400 rounds for like $360 or something like that.
Yeah, the Privy Partisan, or whatever they call it. I've looked at that stuff in the past. I think it's similar, it's the bulk stuff that's, cheap, and, I don't know if there's any problem per se. The only thing I gotta worry about with the Grand and the 03A3, and, well, I don't know about the 03A3 for sure, but the Grand for sure, you gotta be careful with the pressures. The old school 30-06, the ball stuff, that, Korean War vintage stuff that I'm looking at there, is perfect for the Grand, but some of the newer loads are much hotter, and they sell a gas plug you can get for the Grand to tame it down so that you can shoot the modern loads, and that's probably the safest thing to do, is get that and then just be able to shoot the modern loads, and I think you can adjust it. You can click it one way to shoot the the older loads, and then flip it the other way to release a little bit of the pressure and be able to shoot the newer modern loads. But, that's the key right there.
And, you know, and then there's corrosive, you know, you got to watch that. I saw some stuff today that was some actual Korean, not Korean War vintage, but actual Korean surplus stuff that was corrosive. And I remember there was a lot of that corrosive ammo for the M1 carbine. They had canisters of it, you know, you had to be careful, it was corrosive, but... And I was always worried about that. Then I come to find out, all that means is you just gotta make sure you clean the gun. It's really not a big deal.
Yeah, you're right. And that gizmo sounds pretty handy there for the older rifles kind of thing. I have not had any. I have not bought any older rifles that are any older than me. In fact, most of the time I just don't keep them very. I don't keep them very long, I guess. The ones I bought originally when I first started buying them, they're all gone. It seems like I'm always buying new stuff. Just the way it worked out, I guess.
Yeah, I buy, but I never sell. You know, the few that I've sold over the years, I always regret. And, I mean, there's a couple that I sold that I'm like, you know, shrug. I don't really care one way or the other, But I just got used to just like, you know, if I buy something, chances are it's going to be with me forever. Leads to a storage, issue, but as long as you can keep on top of that. But I got on that, I call it the Guns of My Forefathers kick. And it all started when I stumbled into that London Small Arms SMLE that I briefly told you about today. I stumbled across that in an estate sale. A guy wanted me to help sell his father's guns. He knew nothing about them. And I was really, really active on Michigan Gunners at the time, and I listed them all. You know, I researched each one, found out a reasonable price for them, and sold them all for him. The guy had like 77 or 70-some-odd guns, and I sold the bulk of them to him. And there was, oh, God, there was a dozen I was interested in. But, you know, I didn't have the money for all of them, so I just picked a couple that, you know, I really wanted. And that particular one was one of his dad's, and, you know, God knows how he came into it. You know, he was just a collector over many, many years. Hold on a sec here. But, you know, I knew my grandfather. He was, he served with the Royal Engineers in the Somme and, you know, all over World War One, and when he signed up right at the end of 1914, and that very likely been, that was one of the really high quality guns that were made early in the war. You know, they started pumping them out much faster when BSA and other manufacturers were making them and just trying to get quantities. But in the early years, the LSAs were the really good ones, and that likely been what he'd been handed. You know, not that one. I mean, I guess. By some crazy, you know, odds of, you know, fate, it could be, but it would have been one very much like that. It would have been an LSA, probably 1914, and I says, you know, that this is probably, if not, you know, almost identical to the one my grandfather would have carried. And I got on this kick, and then I got the one my dad would have carried in World War II, you know, and then I got the, you know, and that's where I started. That's why I got the Grand, the old 3A3, the SMLE. And I've been looking for a Krag to kind of, you know, I got two more to get, a Krag and then an 1860s musket Enfield, and I'll have completed the Guns of My Forefathers goal.
Oh, that's cool. Well, you know, there sure is nothing wrong with that. That's for sure. And I do, I regret everything I got rid of except for one. I had a 300 Weatherby, and that thing was a beast, man. I had a muzzle brake put on it, and even with the muzzle brake put on it, it was a beast. And I thought, well, I got it in case I went back to Alaska kind of thing, but that was never going to happen. So I didn't mind getting rid of that one.
Oh, that's a bucket list one for me. I mean, not anymore, but I've always wanted a 300 Weatherby. Was it a Weatherby, or was it just chambered in 300 Weatherby, or both?
Yeah, it was a Weatherby Vanguard. I had seen them things for sale just about every gun shop, everywhere that sold them for, what was it, $1,099 or something, $1,095 or something like, you know, the shiny, the real shiny stock and the shiny bluing and all that. And I thought, someday I'm going to have one of those. And I wandered into, of all places, a Kmart. Just to see what they had, and they had them on sale for $5.95 or something. So I bought a $270, and then I took it home, and I think the next day I went back and got the $300 Weatherby. It's kind of like a match set; it looked pretty much identical.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I've always pined for one of those, and so. That's interesting that that's one of the ones you got rid of that you don't regret. So, I never did own one. Never owned a Weatherby at all. Nothing in 300 Weatherby. But I needed to get something to replace my, you know, aside from my vintage, you know, my vintage pieces. I got to figure out where I'm going here. I'm going to pick up this chair, and I don't know where I'm supposed to go to do that. It's At Home Decor Superstore. I've never will called anything from here before, so your guess is as good as mine. But anyhow, bottom line is that, you know, I have the older stuff, the 303 British, and then, you know, the old 383 sorry, I'm navigating the parking lot here, and it's squirreling me. Grand and all that stuff, but I don't have anything modern. Yeah, that's why I picked up that 700. I had a Ruger, and I regret selling it, and there you go. I did trade it for a really nice 1100 trap gun. You know, it's so custom trap. And, you know, I'm glad to have that, you know, gun. I really am. It's a beautiful piece, and I needed I didn't have any automatic shotguns, and I wanted that 1100 trap. Hold on. So I ended up trading the Ruger M77, but that Ruger in 30-06 was a pack driver. And, you know, so I wish I had both, you know. I wish I had the shotgun and the Ruger M77. But when I got rid of that, I didn't have any modern centerfire large bores, so that's why I bought the 700 to kind of fill that niche that didn't need filling but left a hole in my heart.
Yes, sir, they do, and that's the reason I went back and got that 300 Weatherby. I thought, well, should I make it back to Alaska there? It'd be nice to have something with a little muscle behind it kind of thing. But the doggone rifle was so light, and that thing just, it was a beast. I tried to get the gunsmith to sight it in for me. He said, you couldn't pay me enough money to shoot that thing. All right, I'll do it myself. So I think I just barely, I got on paper right away, bore sighted it, and I think it took three rounds to get it in the bullseye, and I couldn't shoot no more. My shoulder was shot, my hand was, it came back so fast and so hard, the trigger guard would slam into my middle finger, to the middle finger, and it would swell up after the first shot kind of thing. So I had a brake put on it, and that helped a little bit, but not much. But the one I regretted most was the Desert Eagle, or... I guess it was the Desert Eagle. When they decided to get into rifles, they had a custom gunsmith designed this rifle they called the Mountain Eagle. And it was exactly what I was thinking of having a gunsmith make at the time. So supposedly they said they were only making 1,000 of them, so I figured it was going to be a collector's item.
That was really strange. I heard like a fit, 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 and then you dropped. All done.
Yeah, my finger slipped off. Talking too much, I guess.
All right, well, good timing because I'm here at home. I'm going to go inside and get my chair. I'll be back here. Yeah, speaking of a bit too much, let me tell you a story about a little Smith & Wesson my son purchased. I'll hit you up on that when I get back out here in a couple of minutes. I gotta go grab my chair though. W8FU after yours.
Okay, catch you later, Sean. KEAWOJ.
Oh, well, that thing was just a little heavier than I expected.
Is it in the trunk of your car, or you got a van or a truck or something?
I got a little SUV. It's not a very big box. But it's like an office chair. They call it a gaming chair, office chair. But the big deal is it's got a really high back with neck support. So I keep dozing off in my chair in front of my computer, and then I wake up with this terrible pain in my neck, and I go like, oh, but you know, I get, you know, just from being thrown back like that.
Yeah, I got a nice one a long time ago. I figured it'd help with the back. You know, it's got the lumbar support and just all kinds of gizmos on it. And it was kind of expensive, but I figured if it got rid of the back pain, it'd be worth it, but it didn't. So, but it's still a nice, comfortable chair.
Yeah, I was debating. I was looking at some, like, at IKEA that were, like, you know, two-something, three-something, you know, really looking nice and all that stuff. And, you know, but IKEA's, you know, a really, really long drive, and, you know, all the way down there in Canton or wherever the heck it is. And I looked around at some other places around here, and I didn't really find anything, you know, that was, my God, people are horny today. And I don't mean in a good way. Where I go, people are blasting their horns at other people. But you know, this one here is at home is right there at 14 John R, not far from the house. So they had one. It was only $99. I said, or was this one 119? There was one that was 199 and one that was 119. And I forget which one I got. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to do that. You know, if it doesn't work, it's $100. Whatever.
Sounded like someone was trying to make it in there, but not quite making it.
Well, I'll have to try again. But, yeah, I'll give this one a whirl, and hopefully it'll work out. It looks good. You know, it looks nice. You know, and if it works out, then next time maybe I'll buy the big expensive one. Who knows? So, but anyhow, I'll let you know before the weekend's over. You know, if I fall asleep watching cat videos and I don't wake up with a real pain in my neck, we'll call it success.
Yeah, there you go. And if you don't, what's the right word, smack a thumb or whatever, put the thing together, that's always fun, too. So before you get home, let's hear that Smith & Wesson story.
Oh, see? Yeah, I'm glad you remembered. So speaking of lightweight guns and just a little bit too much oomph, my son had this hanker, and he had to have himself one of those Smith & Wesson, little revolvers that they saw, J-frame, I think it's the J-frame. But he wanted that scandium one. It was made out of wasn't titanium, but super, super lightweight, super strong. I think they called it scandium. And, you know, it was one of their really, really high-end ones. And this little pea shooter, J-frame, was rated to 357 Magnum. So we took it to the range one day with 357 Magnums. And I got, I think it was a five shooter. I don't think it was a six shooter. I think it was a five rounder. And because it was a deep cover J-frame. And I put five rounds of 357 in that bad boy. I managed to get four off, and I just, at that point, I set it down, and I said, I'm done with it. I said, I'm never shooting this thing again, at least not with 357. I'm never shooting this thing again. I am not recoil sensitive at all. I shoot anything, and it just doesn't bother me. That gun was just annoying. I got four rounds off. I set the thing down. I washed my hands of it. I said, I'm done. No, you know, you load it up with 38 plus P or something like that, and it was manageable, but it was just so lightweight, little tiny J-frame, and then you're firing, you're barking off these 357 Magnums, and oh my God, talk about a too light of a gun and too much round. Good God, that was a brutal, brutal gun to shoot. The only thing I ever shot worse than that was a Kel-Tec PF9, and that thing wasn't about the recoil, it was just such a crappy gun. It just, the jagged pieces on it and stuff like that were cutting the webbing between my thumb and my, you know, my shooting finger. And, you know, that was just because it was just a crap gun. But, you know, Kel-Tec, what do you expect?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Old friend of mine and his wife decided they need to get some carry pistol there for protection up north, and they got one of them little dinky revolvers with an 1 7/8 barrel, and I was 38, though, 38 special. So all of a sudden he calls me up one day, he's just freaking out. He goes, man, I can't find any 38 ammo anywhere. And I says, well, I'll just load you up some. So I loaded him up some, and I figured it's self-defense, you know what I mean? So those are usually almost max load. So I loaded up a bunch of different stuff from 125 grain on up to 158s and different stuff. And so I took him up there to him a month or two later. We went out in the yard there to shoot him. And that was, you know, these are just 38s, you know. And, man, that was a handful. And they were, like, freaking out. They were like, man, I can't shoot these things. Can't you? What did you do? And I said, well, they're defensive. Or, you know, they're supposed to be that way. So I got to load them up some starting load 38s and send them to them.
This is Kilo Foxtrot 8 Echo Tango Quebec. I heard you guys talking about something. Maybe gun things. I don't necessarily fully know. Either way, my question is, what repeater are you connected to? Because I think I'm hearing the same conversation on two different repeaters that I thought were not linked.
We are on the Rick is probably on, well, I'm not sure where Rick is, quite honestly. I'm on the 2.6 in Warren. Rick is usually on the KC8 LTS in Detroit, but we were linked to the 7.2 yesterday, and I don't know if we ever dropped that link. So, Rick, where are you at? I'm on the Warren 442.6.
Yeah, I'm on All-Star on the Warren also. I couldn't do the LTS anymore. There was a dead carrier most of the time, and then all that beeping going on, so I jumped on the clear node and got on the Warren.
There you go, Darren. That answers your question.
Yeah, that answers my question. I heard you on WAMACNKAFBI, so that answers that one. And yeah, LTS is misbehaving recently, and I've noticed that. That's why I've dropped it from my scan list. Okay. Kilo Fox Trot 8 Echo Tango Quebec. That's it for now.
All right. Yeah, we had these linked up for the net last night, and I just never got around to unlinking them, and apparently nobody else did. So, oops, whatever. If I think of it later when I get home, I'll unlink and relink. But you never know. But yeah, anyhow, just you know, to your point, you know, just Rick to circle back on that, defensive loads and stuff like that. Yeah, I've heard people poo-poo things like the 380, you know, as a defensive round, and I get it. I'm a firm believer in, you know, in caliber. But if you got a 380, you know, your wife can handle and shoot. You know, versus a 38 plus P, you know, scandium revolver she can't handle or can't shoot. I think you're way, ahead of the game with with the 380. I'd rather have her hit with a couple of 380s than miss with, half a dozen 38s. So there's a lot to be said about being comfortable with it and being able to control it.
You are absolutely right. It's all, to me, in my opinion anyway, just my opinion, but it's all about shot placement. It don't seem to, well, according to a lot of ER doctors, they get more messed up and dead people from 22 long rifles than anything else, because people can shoot them well. There's pretty much no recoil, and they're tiny little 40 grain bullets, but if you put them where you want, they seem to do the job.
Yeah, I don't want to get in my room, truth be told, so there's that. All right, I'm pulling in the driveway here with my gaming chair. I'm going to get inside and see how to put it together and take it on a maiden voyage. Maybe treat it to a couple of cat videos and a celebratory Miller High Life. So we'll be back in here in a bit to either be crying about the woes of putting my chair together or basking in the glow of accomplishment. W8FU after yours.
Okay, Sean, after you do get it together, you might want to set an alarm just in case you do fall asleep. You ought to spend the night in there. We'll catch you later. K8WOJ.
W8FOO.
Well, I see you didn't fall asleep in the chair.
Yeah, it was, you know, the guy at the, when I bought the thing, he's like, I walk in and I go to the left and I walk over where the registers are and he says, he goes, yeah, just go wait over there by the pole, and he sends me the other direction. And then he works with some other people, and then he goes, you know, with the online order, and I'm standing, like, way over where he sent me, you know, online order, and then I look, I go, me? And he says, yeah, and so I walk all the way back over to where I was in the first place, and then he walks me even farther in the other direction, yeah, it's right here. And I'm like, well, then why did you send me over there to wait by the pole? It's like, and then he's like, you know, he goes, oh, yeah, it's a really nice chair. He goes, really easy to put together. And bullshit, you know what? That thing was a pain in the rump. Typical, you know, typical IKEA chair. It wasn't bad, but it went all together pretty easy. They give you extra parts, which is cool. They barely give you enough wrench, so I have to go get my own tools. But anyhow, it's all together, and I plopped in it, and so far, so good. We'll see.
Excellent. I think mine took me a couple hours to put it together. Everything was... But, yeah, I don't know. It was worth it. It was a one-time deal kind of thing. And it's a nice chair, but I figured with that back thing there, it would help out with the back, but it was just, that didn't seem to do much enough for my back anyway.
Yeah, I'm not looking like for that. I just needed something to support my neck because I kick back in it, and sometimes I'll doze, and then my neck will be, like, flung all the way back. And I'll get just get really painful, and I'm like, oh, and I gotta practically use my hands to lift my head up. It gets a crick, and I just so this one will support my head. That's the biggest thing. It's all right. I think the chair I had that I'm retiring is a lot higher quality. It weighs about three times as much as this chair. I don't think this thing's gonna be ultra durable. I don't expect to get more than a couple of years out of it, maybe. But it's a lot lighter, and but it's comfortable, you know. But it's $99, so we'll see. If this works out real well for me, maybe next time I'll invest a little bit more and get something, you know, something better, last longer. Try it out. You know how it goes.
Well, those high backs aren't good for comfort. There, mine saved me a couple of times. Quite a long while back, I wasn't working, had no income going, and I had a bad tooth. And I decided, and they wanted $600 to pull a tooth around here, and I didn't have $600, so I decided to do it myself. And all I had was Motrin to take, so you can imagine. Anyway, I ended up blacking out from the pain, and luckily I sat in that chair because I knew if I wasn't in that chair, I'd probably end up on the floor, hit my head on something when I went down. And yeah, the chair saved me. I woke up in the chair, and then I was hurting even worse than when I tried it. So I thought, man, I got to get this thing out.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. I had one really, really bad one, so bad that I was just doubled over, you know, with my head and my hands. Just, I couldn't escape it. I couldn't get away from it. It was so bad. And they brought me in, I think I got in for an emergency extraction the next day. And they got rid of it. And, and then the guy prescribes me, Vicodin. He prescribes me Vicodin. And I'm like, I don't need it now.
Yeah, when I went and had a couple of teeth pulled there, they did that. They gave me Vicodin, and it made me sick. it's amazing how much the tooth pain could... the whole half of my head was on that side where the tooth was. It was like somebody stuck a nail or a spike or something in my ear, and the whole half of my head was just aching so bad. I thought, I can't take this. I got to do something. So, and then you don't have the tools that a dentist has, so you got just plain old pliers. You slip off of there, and then you got to grab the pliers and squeeze them harder than you're pulling on with the. It's just a nightmare. I don't recommend it to anyone.
God, no. I know the pain, though. I know the temptation to do it just to get it out. You know, it could drive you to that. But yeah, you didn't try the string and the door handle, Larry Moe Curly style.
No, I wish. If it wasn't hurting so doggone bad, I could have worked it, you know, just spent some time working it loose, and then it wouldn't have been so bad pulling it. But it was in there pretty solid. In fact, I was starting to think I wasn't strong enough to get it out.
Yeah, it's when you got to phone a friend, man. Man, that's crazy. I couldn't even imagine trying that. But is that the one that cracked? I think mine split in half, exposing the root. And pretty sure that was that. I've only had two teeth extracted, and they were one was a wisdom tooth. I got my wisdom tooth came in uneventful, and I had no problem with them. And I lost one of them. I had to get it extracted. The other one I lost a couple years ago. Was a tooth up from there. That one I noticed gone. Everyone saw. Yeah, I'll take an aspirin, and I'll be damned if the damn aspirin doesn't find that little spot every time. Like, I had to fish it out of there. You know, it's like, damn it, how does it always find that spot? Anyhow, I will listen to your reply here, then I'm going to jump inside Chicken Shack, grab my din-din, and I'll be back. W8FU.
Okay, I'm laughing over here the way you described it, and that's true, too. But it's not funny. That kind of pain ain't funny. All right, have a good luck with your Chicken Shack there. Catch you later. KDWOJ.
Hey, Sean, you got a sec? Delete a few, please, Pierre.
Bill, did you switch radios or something? You don't sound as clear as you normally do.
Yeah, this is a good story. It doesn't have the power of the other one. So it's kind of annoying. I'm in an area that's not even up and down, hilly trees, all that stuff.
Oh, okay, because you're, besides the audio sounding different, you do have some noise with you.
Yeah, this is Anycone 578. It's a temporary thing. Or do something different, but just don't know what yet. When I see a date, we'll make my decision.
Oh, I got you. That's what I'm talking to you on right now. Also, a 578, what is it, UV3 Plus or something like that?
This is a plain one. No, nothing fancy. No GPS, no Bluetooth. Just a basic radio.
Well, Sean ought to be back in a minute. He just went in the chicken shack there to get his dinner.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Go over to the local Costco to fill my tank and run my fumes. Trying to wait to see prices drop. I guess they did a little bit.
Well, good luck. It seems like the prices on everything else is going up.
Well, the Costco near my house is at $4.39, which is hard. It's hard to believe I'm saying it, but it sounds like a bargain.
Yeah, it fills up. Luckily, my car's pretty good on gas. I filled up in Tego there at the mobile. I can't remember what it was, but it seemed to me like it was like 470, 480 or something like that at the time. But that was probably a week ago.
All right, sounds good. I'll see if I can hear Sean before he's at the gas station or whatever. He's got some, I gotta ask him. So, CPR, catch you later.
Okay, have a good one, KEWOJ.
This is Kilo Foxtrot 8, Echo Tango, pull back. Kilo Foxtrot 8, Echo Tango, pull back. Kilo Foxtrot 8, Echo Tango, pull back. Why the heck is that there? Okay, Kilo Foxtrot 8, Echo Tango, Quebec, testing, and I'm pulling 10 watts transmit power, and I am using 3.8 amps. This is Kilo Foxtrot 8, Echo Tango, Quebec, Kilo Foxtrot 8, Echo Tango, Quebec, testing, and I am at 12 volts, 8.4 amps. At 40 watt transmit power. Okay, so no time to do the math. Kilo Foxtrot 8, Echo Tango, Quebec.
KEWOJ, wherever you're at, you're sounding pretty clear. You're getting out fine.
When the repeater is not too far away, it's hard not to hit it. This is Kilo Foxtrot 8, Echo Tango, Quebec. I believe I am maybe less than 10 miles away from the repeater.
Oh, cool. Well, that makes it pretty easy then, especially on 40 watts.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out my current meter that I have set up. I'm trying to verify if that's working, and it looks like it's roughly working. The numbers are kind of what I expect. It said it was pulling 100 watts from the battery when it was transmitting at 40 watts, so I don't know what that's about, but either way, Kilo Foxtrot 8, Echo Tango, Quebec.
Okay, well, good luck with that, and like I said, you're sounding good anyway. It's just about time for my nightly ice cream, so I will catch you later. KEAWOJ.
Catch you later, Kilo Foxtrot 8, Echo Tango, Quebec.
Sean, did you get your chicken yet? Just got back in the car, yes. try to catch it before you went in. But question, I'm going to see you at breakfast tomorrow. I'm going to bring that XPS 5000 back to you. Do you want me to, you know, I put my call sign in there. Do you want me to set it back to sell anything in particular?
No, no. I mean, if you're done with it, fine. And I'll just, I've got the program. It's probably out of date. I'll probably update it. So, not a problem.
Okay, sounds good. See you in the morning.
Alrighty, what are you on now?
I don't know. Let's see. LC? No, I don't know. No. I'm on the ending tone 570. I threw in the car here.
Alright, it's got a bit of an odd sound. It doesn't sound like you normally do. No, not a problem, per se, but just kind of significantly different than you usually sound.
No, usually I'm on the Kenwood, but that's the UHF is out of the car here. I can go through, I don't know if I can hit Mount Clemens from here, but I could go through that. Probably sound more like what you used to.
No, it's fine. It's perfectly you. And it's not even fidelity. It's just maybe a little hotter than I'm used to hearing you. But it's not overly hot, so it's weird. I don't know. Like maybe the sensitivity's higher, but not necessarily deviation. I don't know. It's just different. I wouldn't even worry about it. I'll give it another thought.
Okay. Here's my phone.
Noisier, but yeah, that sounds more like what I'm used to. But I'd rather hear you different on the other one.
Yeah, I was told the mic, at least on GMR, I was told it was a little hot on this, but that was at the low setting. I didn't check the analog mic setting. Maybe do you think it needs to come down if it can?
That's kind of what I'm feeling. I'm feeling like it's just a little on the hot side. But it's not, you know, but it's not horrible. You know, it's not like you gotta turn that down. But it might be a little on the hot side.
All right, when I stop, I'll check it, see if there's any room there. Like I said, it's got two settings for digital and analog, and the digital is at the lowest. So I wonder if there might be an adjustment inside the microphone. I'll have to check that out.
Roger. I've been told I'm a little hot on my mic too, so, you know, who am I to talk, right? But I don't hear me. And I don't know where I'm at right now in the grand scheme of things.
All right. Sounds good. All right, just about to pull the guest in here so they get through this light. Talk to you later. See you in the morning. Okay, Peter.
All right. Oh, by the way, the seats has got they're starting to go vertical, so it's starting to look like something. See you in the morning. W8FU.
Did you see all the texts I sent you in regards to the Vertex?
I did. I wasn't 100% sure I understood, but I think what you're saying is you found all the stuff for those ones I sent you the pictures of.
I'm assuming they're 150s to 150 up, you know, R2. They call it C, but I'm assuming they're Cs or R2s. So I found the stuff to get them down, and I found the software to also get them to go there, and basically rule of thumb, it says if you drop it below what it's rated for, don't run it, it will blast.
All right, well, you probably know a lot more about them than I do. I'm guessing they're what,
units.
50 watts analog only. In order to get them to go wideband, you have to use, similar to Motorola, you have to use European software. So I found that. So I got everything there to make them go, no matter where they're at. And European software will get us wideband, and then the dash R or dash D will get us the ability to take them out of band.
Those are just analog?
Yep-er. Although they're very popular. They're real easy to convert into DMR with the MMDVM. There's things all over the net if you want to convert them.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can convert anything with a MMDVM board, but all right, I thought they were natively DMR. All right, there's more than that. That's just the two I sent you. Anyhow, TBD, I'm going to get inside with the chicky. W8FU.
Take care. We're going to go out and have a soda pop up with some friends. So I'll be in the car for a little bit, but after that I'll be gone. I'll talk to you later. WBD.
Hey, Wally, NAWRO.
Hey, what's up?
It's Friday night, right? Is it Kids Net tonight on FBI? Because if so, I might drop us.
Yeah, the way it's set up right now, I mean, if Sean wants to put the Kids Net onto the FBI, that's up to him. If not, you can drop it and then connect it back together, whatever the leader would like. Did you copy that, or what happened? Sorry, the repeater took a break. If Sean wants to put it on both, that's up to him. If not, just drop it and do the other. But I haven't heard the young man in a while. Have you?
No, I haven't heard Wyatt, but my understanding was it's auto-generated. I don't know if that's the same thing. That it would just at 8 o'clock, it would start, sending on the FBI. I thought if that's the case, we might want to have a talk around. So then I drop the Mecca.
Be honest with you, I'm happy either way. It doesn't, can't leave it alone or do it the other way. Either way, whatever's happy.
Understood. Dealer's choice. I'll be listening. And clear. Thanks, Wally. NAWRO. Clear.
Yeah, see what Dave says.
Sean, if you're still out there, and does it sound any different? Keep here. Keep here, test. Test, test, test. Test, test. Keep here, test.
currently connected to CMN Network.
Kilo Echo 8, Foxtrot Lima Yankee Radio, Jack.
Kilo Echo 2, Bravo November Yankee, monitoring.
Connected to CMN Network.